Hello and welcome to One-on-One with LAPA, the Legislative Analysis and Public Policy Association's podcast series, where experts discuss key issues and emerging topics in the areas of public health and safety, substance use disorders, and the criminal justice system. LAPA is funded by a grant from the Office of National Drug Control Policy in the Executive Office of the President. Neither the Office of National Drug Control Policy nor any other federal instrumentality operate, control, or are responsible for or necessarily endorse this podcast. I'm Susan Weinstein, President of LAPA, your host for today's podcast on the diversion of drugs in healthcare settings. My guest today is Tom Knight, the founder and executive director of healthcarediversion.org, a nonprofit association whose mission is to prevent diversion from harming patients, providers, and communities. Welcome, Tom. Thank you for joining.
Thank you, Susan.
So I'd like you to explain, before we get into some of the questions, tell our listeners a little bit about your nonprofit and how it came about.
Sure. Our nonprofit is healthcarediversion.org. We're a 501c3 nonprofit, a public charity, and a public-private partnership. And our mission is to reduce diversion in healthcare facilities. And we started it a little over 2 years ago. I and several other folks that were active in the area realized there was really no single organization that could bring together all the key stakeholders that have an interest in reducing diversion. Stakeholders at the public level, federal, state, local jurisdictions, both law enforcement and regulators. And on the private side, healthcare facilities and their executives and leaders, or all the other private organizations like payers, insurers, technology companies, all the different private organizations that are stakeholders looking to reduce diversion in healthcare. And in particular, it was Matt Crist, who's at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and I that sat down and said, if we formed this nonprofit, it would give all those different stakeholders a chance to come together and find best practices and raise awareness to help reduce diversion in healthcare.
Great. So my first question then would be, how bad is the problem of healthcare workers stealing medications from hospitals or from individual patients?
It's a significant problem, and most people aren't aware of how often it happens. Many studies have found that roughly 10% of healthcare workers will steal medications from their employers at some point in their career. These are pharmacists, medical providers and doctors, nurses that have access pretty much every day to these medications. And while most people never steal them, it's pretty common that some do. Most are stealing the medications for their own self-use, perhaps because they've developed a substance use disorder. Occasionally, people will steal them for others, loved ones, or they might be stealing them to resell in the community for profit. So a lot of studies have been done, and they do vary in what percentage of providers or professionals are stealing, but roughly 10% is the number that on average studies have found.
Considering the number of healthcare providers, 10% is quite a lot. You track diversion in all 50 states and the District of Columbia. In which jurisdiction does there appear to be the most healthcare diversion?
Yeah, we have actually in our database on our website at healthcarediversion.org a nice and sadly growing database of all the incidents that we're aware of, and that do include incidents in all 50 states and jurisdictions like the District of Columbia. There's really no one jurisdiction where there appears to be more diversion than another. Pretty much every state has healthcare facilities where diversion is happening. We do find that some jurisdictions do a better job of reporting diversion, say, in their state. There's some states we found are leading, like Indiana, Tennessee, and a few others, that really want to raise awareness of the issue. When diversion is found, it's reported in a very transparent way, say, by their state licensure boards. So that might give the impression there's more diversion in those states that are reporting more transparently, when really it's just the other states maybe aren't finding the diversion or reporting it as transparently.
That's interesting. Do you think that a model law or laws in the states would help, quell some of this?
Definitely. And that's a big part of why our nonprofit was formed, is so various states can learn from each other on model laws and best practices for regulations. There are some best practices that we have found we can promote. One of them is that when medical professionals are found to be diverting, instead of just disciplinary action, we want to give them access to resources they need to enter recovery for treatment for their substance use disorder. And the more we can promote that that's an option for someone who's diverting, the better, because they're more likely to come forward and ask for the help they need with their disease. Or their colleagues might be more motivated to refer them to get the help they need with their disease. If people think they're going to lose their medical license, and sadly that can be the only route in some states, then they're less likely to come forward to get the help they need with disease, more likely to go underground and try and cover up their diversion. And that's an area where we think states can propagate best practices. So the states that are offering those paths for recovery can be a model that's used by other states that maybe don't have those best practices.
Well, that may just be our next assignment at LAPA. So, you know, along the line of, you know, what people are doing, how are the healthcare workers caught diverting? Does like a colleague turn them in, or how does this happen?
Traditionally, there's two ways that people had been caught. If you go back to, say, the last 50 years, it was either somebody reporting a colleague because their behavior is impaired. You know, maybe they're sleeping at the nurse's station and things like that. For the last 20 years, there have been automated dispensing cabinets in most hospitals and inpatient facilities. And those have some basic monthly reports that will tell administrators, say this nurse or this anesthesia provider is dispensing significantly more narcotics than their peers. And so those traditionally have been the two ways that people have been detected. More recently, there's some more advanced technology that uses machine learning, some research that was funded by the NIH that I was involved with. And that's showing real promise that hospitals and healthcare facilities can take data they have electronically, like in the electronic medical record, and use that to detect diversion that might have gone undetected in the past. And that's encouraging as well to help us know where the diversion's happening.
Yeah, that's wild. That's great. So you track diversion not only by states, but by profession. So you've got it on your website, healthcarediversion.org. You have nurses, doctors, pharmacists, and a subset of doctors, anesthesiologists. Have you found that one profession over the other diverts substances more? And also, if so, why do you think that happens?
Pretty much every profession has access to the medications and does divert. We have studied the issue, and there's a lot of practice-specific research that's been done, and there's really no one profession that diverts more than others. But we have found that certain specialties, because they have greater access to the medication, tend to have higher rates of diversion. Anesthesia, in particular, has been a profession where this has been studied extensively. And it appears that anesthesia providers, whether they're certified registered nurse anesthetists or anesthesiologists, anyone with access to these powerful medications, they're often self-supervising, say in an operating room at one end of the patient. And it is fairly easy for them to gain access without supervision and take some of those medications home or even administer to themselves during the procedure. So that's one area, not specific to a profession, but just specific to an area, a clinical area, where diversion tends to happen a little often than other areas. And in nursing, we find that different specialties, rates of diversion can vary widely. So oncology nursing, for example, often have patients on high doses of opioids and painkillers. People who are looking to divert sometimes select specialties like these because they know they have greater access to the medications.
Yeah, that's interesting. I was just reading an article, and I apologize, I don't remember which state this was, or which jurisdiction, I don't even think it was the entire state, where they were teaching seniors or giving seniors deactivation pouches so that once they were done with their medications, they could, you know, they wouldn't be diverted. Which brings me to the question, if if there's a hospice nurse, or if there's, you know, someone who comes in three times a week to help the elderly person who might have cancer and has, you know, pain pills, how can you detect that? That's a lot more difficult.
It is. In fact, there's some evidence that people looking to divert will actually apply for jobs in home health or hospice because there's less oversight, less supervision, and it's harder to detect their diversion. So that's a real challenge. I think people are becoming more aware of that, but we still have a big challenge as a country preventing diversion across the whole range of facility types like hospice and home care.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of scary. Mm-hmm. You had mentioned earlier that drug diversion in healthcare is not necessarily on the radar of many public health and public safety professionals, let alone the public in general. Why is that, and how can we make people more aware?
One thing I'll say is, if you ask most healthcare professionals, do you know a colleague who has diverted medications? Most of them, sadly, do know someone that they've worked with. And it doesn't matter whether in pharmacy, nursing, anesthesia, anywhere. However, if you're outside the field, you might not be aware of how often it happens, or may not know anybody personally who's been involved. Similarly, if you talk to regulators like public health people at the state level, state licensure boards like boards of nursing, board of pharmacy, medical boards, they also usually have firsthand knowledge of at least one and often many dozens of cases of diversion. So what we do find, though, is it's not well understood, and people who are not aware, if they're outside a healthcare field or outside one of these regulatory groups that oversee hospitals or healthcare facilities. And that's a big part of why our nonprofit was formed, was to raise awareness that it's happening. It's happening quite often. It's happening in our backyard. One of the things we've built on our website is a map where you can see the whole country, and there's sadly hundreds of pins on the map, each one incident of diversion. And you can zoom in into your own region, your own state, your own city, and you can see it's happening in your backyard. You can click on the map and it'll show you what incident has been reported at that facility. So what we're doing is we're trying to get the word out that it's happening in our backyards, that it's something that, you know, as policymakers, as regulators, as law enforcement, it's just as important to prevent this type of substance use and to be aware of it as any other type of licit or illicit drug use.
Right. You know, I know that the public is somewhat aware, you know, at least I've seen things where they focus on the teenager stealing from the parents' medicine cabinet to go to a party. That's the only kind of thing. And then people think, well, then I'll just lock up my meds and then there won't be a problem. So that's actually something that I think is, sort of a jumping off point, right, from there, so that we can make people more aware of this.
And those efforts are important. The drug take back days that the DEA and local law enforcement do are really important to get those unused pain medications out of our medicine cabinets so they don't fall in the hands of someone, in a loved one or someone coming to our house. But healthcare diversion is also a huge source of risk for our communities. I mentioned that sometimes people steal the medications because of a profit motive. And there's sadly very large examples of that. Here in our hometown of Atlanta at Emory Midtown Hospital, for example, two pharmacy technicians over the course of 3 years stole over 1 million doses of opioids, and they were all for resale throughout the Southeast, largely to our young people. And sadly, I'm sure some of them became addicted as a result. And it's not just the addictive medications. It's also very expensive medications like the hospital, the Veterans Administration Hospital in New Jersey had a pharmacist that stole over $8 million of HIV medication for sale on the black market. So these are cases where if the diversion's not caught, and these were both cases where it happened for over years before the people were also often caught, this can lead to a lot of addiction and a lot of risk for our communities and contribute to the opioid crisis and overdose deaths that we have.
Yeah, it's quite sad because obviously they went into the profession for good reasons, and then they find that maybe they're not making enough money, so they'll do it in another way. That's quite sad.
And it's worth repeating, most of the people who are diverting for their own use. And none of them started saying, I hope I get addicted to this medication. That's just the nature of the addictive medication. It's changing their brain chemistry and leading them, unfortunately, into substance use disorder. And we see that as a real need so that we can get the people the help they need with their recovery. And hopefully, as a country, we can do a better job of not only detecting it when it happens, but even more important, deterring it from ever starting so that someone doesn't reach for that hydrocodone in the future that they would have reached for because they're pretty sure they'll get caught if they do so.
Right. Well, you know, so some of the things that I've read about diversion in healthcare, they all seem to punish the offender, right? There was jail time. Now, I don't know if there was substance use treatment in the jails, but is that typical for what you see?
It's not typical. Most of the professionals who come forward and say, I have a substance use disorder and I'd like recovery services so that I can perhaps get medication and treatment, medication assisted treatment. Most of those people are not going to jail. They're getting the help they need with their disease. The exceptions to that are people who are stealing for resale. They're often prosecuted and face criminal penalties like jail time. And there are some exceptions where clinicians have diverted with the medications in a way that really hurts their patient, either because they're impaired while they're practicing medicine and they make mistakes, or notably, they can infect their patients. If I can explain, one pattern of diversion is where, let's say I divert a needle or a syringe of fentanyl, and I take that into the employee restroom and I inject it into my own arm and I replace that with water or something worse. And then that goes back and gets injected into the patient. Well, I could have a bloodborne pathogen like hepatitis or HIV, or just the non-sterile nature of whatever got into the patient could lead to an infection. And the people that are diverting in that way, and there's sadly dozens of cases of that, those often, when they're found, will face jail time because of the damage or the death that they've caused to their patients.
Hopefully they would also get treatment in the correctional facility.
Yeah.
That's a shame. What is the most egregious case you're aware of? You might have already told us.
There is a case, David Katwalski, who diverted at over a dozen hospitals. He was actually a surgical technician. So he was one of the people in the operating room preparing the various instruments and so on. And he was working for a contract company that placed people like himself in hospitals around the country. And despite him having gotten caught in a hospital in Arizona, he was actually found in the restroom with the syringe floating in the toilet bowl. He was able to leave that facility and get reassigned at other hospitals in states all across the U.S. In fact, if you go to our website and search for his name in our database, you'll see over a dozen hospitals where he did this same type of diversion. And he did infect people because he did have hepatitis C, and he did infect people with hepatitis C. And it wasn't until those infections popped up in many, many patients in a hospital in Exeter, New Hampshire, that he was eventually caught. So that's the scariest case we have that I can think of, where thousands of patients had to be tested for hepatitis C across multiple states, all done by one person who had been diverting. And he's now in federal prison and was just denied parole recently by the judge that saw all the damage he had done across all these different states.
That's unbelievable. I also find it unbelievable that he was able to get to so many hospitals. You know, didn't they like interview people? Maybe he gave his friends as a reference and said they were a physician or whatever, but that's very scary.
And that could happen again. And that's back to our nonprofit. A reason that we founded it is sometimes when someone's diverting and they get caught, the leaders of that healthcare facility, like the CEO of the hospital, does the right thing, and they report that person as required by law to law enforcement and to the state licensure board, who is there to protect public health and also get that clinician the help they need if they have substance use disorder. That's what we want to happen all the time, because too often today, when someone's detected diverting, that leader doesn't do the right thing, but instead just quietly fires them. And that person is going to just go across town or across state lines, get another job at another facility, and keep doing it all over again, possibly hurting their patients. And so that's part of what we're trying to raise awareness of, is not only is the diversion happening, but when it is detected, leaders in these facilities need to do the right thing as required by law and report them to protect the public, protect the patients, and get the person the help they need.
That actually sounds to me like, you know, the podcast Dr. Death. Maybe you don't.
Yes. I do. I've listened to it. Yes. Yeah, chilling. So
it's the same thing with the doctor. If anybody listening doesn't know, a physician was operating on spines and he paralyzed and killed some people, but he went to another, he was quote unquote quietly fired. And then he was sent to another hospital. No one said anything. So he, you know, obviously hurt more people. That sounds similar.
There is actually some chilling similarities. There's a doctor that actually killed a patient and himself during an operation because he injected himself with too much of the anesthetic and killed himself, and did the same to the patient all at the same time. And this was someone who had been detected diverting in another facility, and instead of being reported, had been quietly fired and then went to another facility and led to that tragedy.
That's just awful. Ugh. Is there anything that we haven't discussed that you think listeners should know or what would want to know?
Yes. We really encourage anybody who's aware of diversion in a facility to report that. If you don't report it, it jeopardizes patients. It doesn't get the person who's diverting the help they need to deal with their substance use disorder. And if you've already reported it, we do occasionally receive incidents on our website. And listeners to this podcast, if you're aware of diversion that's happening, you're welcome to report it on our website. But definitely report it to the healthcare facility so that they can do the right thing and investigate it properly. If you've reported it to the facility and you believe it's still going on, maybe management's turning a blind eye, then in your state, in your jurisdiction, there are organizations you can report that to who will investigate it, like the state licensure boards or law enforcement. At the federal level, if you suspect tampering is involved, like the cases I mentioned where someone's injecting themselves and replacing it, there's federal resources like the Food and Drug Administration Office of Criminal Investigations or the DEA to investigate diversion of controlled substances. So the main thing we want everybody to know is if you're aware of diversion, don't let it go unreported. Make sure the facility is aware of it. And if they're not doing what they need to investigate it, then on the public side, there's resources that will hold them accountable to do so.
Great. Well, I want to remind everybody that your website is healthcarediversion1word.org. And it's about all the time we have for today, but thank you so much, Tom. And I just want to remind everybody, he's the founder and executive director of healthcarediversion.org. This was really fascinating. I didn't know much about this, and I'm very interested in learning more. So thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And please join us for the next One-on-One with LAPA, where we will discuss another interesting topic. Thank you for listening.